I'm so happy today because I'm going to talk to a dear, dear friend who is also the most wonderful, wonderful award-winning actor. He's also a brilliant cook, and I love him. It's Peter Firth. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Twiggy. It's lovely to see you.
And you. You're very brown.
Yeah, well, I had a few days in Portugal last Ooh. Week trying to get away from the weather and the rain yeah. here. Of course, first 2 days in Portugal, it threw it down. got completely soaked through, arrived at the hotel, and they won't let you check in these days until it's 3 p.m. You know, we were there at lunchtime, dripping wet in reception. Anyway, it's left me with a cold, but the second 2 days were very sunny, so I've got a bit
but a gorgeous suntan, I can see.
As well.
Well, welcome home.
Thank
it's
you.
Lovely Portugal, actually. I went there, 20 years ago, I think. On the Algarve coast, is that where you were?
That's right, in the yeah. south, yeah. It's yeah. the first time I've been, and
it's lovely.
Food's fabulous.
It is, yeah. Well.
And the weather's a little bit unreliable, but there
well,
you go.
It is March.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's be fair.
Yeah.
You should have gone probably in a month's time, it'd be boiling hot.
It will.
You had a home in Mallorca for a while, didn't you?
I did, yes. Yeah, quite a long time,
the
actually.
Weather leaded my husband, who is an old friend of yours. I think it used to get nice there in about April, didn't it?
Yeah, but they have the most amazing spring in Mallorca in February when there are 4 million almond trees on the island of Mallorca and they all go into blossom at the end of the second week of February. And it looks like it's snowed because there's white flowers just
That's
everywhere.
Right. I remember actually because the year I met Lee in the July
yeah.
of 85, I think it was, and the following February, you're right, he took me out there to show me the blossoms. And it was quite warm during the day. It was bloody freezing at night.
That's it. That's what they say. Take a cardigan, take a sweater.
And big woolly socks.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for coming on my podcast. Have you got your cup of tea?
I have, sitting here. Lapsang Souchong sounds a bit over the top, but I do love it.
Yeah, I quite like it. It's very strong, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've got me lemon and ginger.
Cheers.
Are you a tea drinker or
Not excessive. I like a cup of tea in the morning
yeah.
and then maybe one a bit later, but not...
not excessive.
Not a devotee.
Yeah, I mean, I like my builder's tea in the morning with milk. Although I have to say, the last month, because I just thought I'd try it, I've been taking having that rooibos. I don't know how you pronounce it. The South yeah. African, because it's decaffeinated, and it's actually delicious.
Yeah, that's right, rooibos. In fact, I gave my mum a cup of rooibos tea once.
Yeah,
and I said to her, "This tea is rooibos." And she said, "Oh, it's not that bad." she was full of malapropisms, my mum.
So lovely. So you grew up in Bradford, Yorkshire?
I did, right? Yes, yeah.
What, your mum and dad had a pub?
They did, just outside Bradford. The Waterloo Inn, it was called. I spent my early teens there, late tweenies and teens there before I left for the great wide world at the age of 15.
And so what was it fun growing up kind of in a pub?
Well, it was, yeah. You the envy of all your peers, you know, because you had access to bags of crisps, you know, which could easily be secreted out. And it was just a kind of cool thing, I think, to be, you know, the boy from the pub.
And were you an only child or do you have brothers?
No, I had an older sister, but she fled the nest quite early on. She's 6 years older than I am. And uh-huh. she married the ice cream man.
Oh!
Yeah, he had an ice cream
van. So you had access to ice cream as well?
He was my favourite brother-in-law. but then he started working at Ferranti's in Manchester in early computer development, then went to Silicon Valley, and now they're living in some style in Orange County.
Wow.
So it's quite a leap for those two, you know, I mean,
absolutely.
To go from...
So he caught the beginning of that wave
yeah,
then of
he did, yes.
the techno, whatever you call it.
Yeah, the techno,
Oh, just like
it.
Me. Techno is not. Yeah. We were talking about that earlier, weren't we?
Yeah.
All the things that are hard to do. I'm getting better, but I'm not great.
No, I've
but you have to do you have to do a certain amount, otherwise you get left behind, don't you?
Yeah, well, especially when your children have left home, because I was relying on them to guide me through the technical world, but they're gone, I'm afraid. So yeah. It's all down to me now.
Because how many kids have you got?
I've got three.
And are they all over England?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, my daughter's in Yorkshire, and she's started a family. She's got one baby and one on the way. And
isn't it brilliant being a grandparent?
Well, yeah, it's that whole thing, isn't it? Because you can hand them back at the end of the day. You don't have to deal with the really difficult bits.
And where are the boys?
The boys, my eldest boy is in Colombia. He's gone there on a nomad's visa, digital nomad visa, it's called.
What's that?
Because he works online, the Colombians are offering two-year visas to people to come and work there.
And
it's very attractive because it's very inexpensive cost of living.
And also, I bet apparently it's amazing, Colombia.
Well, yeah, you've got the weather and you've got Shakira. You know, there are many reasons why you would want to live in Colombia. So I think he's doing the right thing. He's gone there and he seems to be loving it. And my youngest lad is, he's a camera crew, trainee camera. Yeah.
That's good. Does he want to be a cameraman?
Yeah, on films. He wants to be a DOP, so.
Brilliant. You know, especially now, I mean, not only films and ordinary TV, with the streaming, there's so much possibilities out there, I would think, for that sort of work. That's brilliant. So anyway, I'm going to take you back to Bradford. So you grew up there. You didn't go to drama school, did you?
I didn't, no. I joined a drama club, which was a children's club, really, at the Civic Playhouse in Bradford. And that convened on a Saturday morning. And really, my reason for going there was because the best-looking girls went there. I think that I wasn't really interested in
I think a lot acting. Of young actors, Lee always says that, he joined the Mount View evening class because there were some pretty girls there.
Yeah. But through them, I got a job as an extra on Yorkshire Television on a soap. I just did one day as a schoolboy. While we were filming that on that day, there was a very diminutive casting director called Michael Barnes. Wonderful man. Very expensive Italian shoes and coiffed hair. He said to me, do you think you could come and meet somebody next week? We're doing a project I think you maybe write for. So indeed I did. I went along and met the director of this program called The Flaxton Boys, which was a Sunday afternoon classic serial. And they offered me the job.
So how old were you?
15.
Oh, God. So did you have to get permission from your mum and dad?
Well, yeah. I mean, and the school, because sitting my O-levels. And so the school said, well, it's quite an opportunity, so you should do it and then come back in 3 months and you can sit your O-levels then. So, fine, but I never went back.
Oh, didn't?
No. The world was too fabulous, and so I got another job immediately after that in London. So
you were on a roll.
I was on a roll. By 16, I was in London and doing another show called Here Come the Double Deckers, which was a Saturday morning.
I remember that. Yeah,
kids' favourite.
So you hadn't kind of planned to act. It was
no
pure.
I completely fell into it.
I mean, it's a bit like what happened to me. I didn't, you know, I was at school. Very similar. Yeah.
You know all about this, Twiggy, you know,
being
plucked from obscurity. And it's all a bit of a mystery, isn't it, when it's happening? You think, well, I sort of go along with it because, it's an opportunity.
Well, it was so exciting, wasn't it? I mean, I actually quite liked school. It wasn't I didn't like school, but the excitement of going into the West End and being photographed, and that must have been the same with you. I mean, being on a set, and learn. I mean, Were you nervous? Maybe you were so young, you weren't even nervous, right?
Not remotely nervous. Yeah, I mean, O-levels were, had gone. I was long behind. And I didn't, you don't know fear when you're young. You know, it's you just sort of get up and do what you're told.
That's true, actually.
I had to have, when I went for the Here Come the Double Deckers in London, they told me that when you walked into the audition, we thought, there he is. And then you opened your mouth. Because I was really broad northern, you know. I was like, oh, I've just come up from King's Cross now. I've come down to see you. So, you know, and so they put me through elocution lessons, which my mother called them electrocution lessons. Yeah. And I earned the northern accent out of me because then it wasn't really fashionable to have a regional accent, which
well,
is
it's become, as you latterly. Know, it's the same with Lee. You know, I know you've known Lee longer than I have. He had a Coventry accent.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah,
he had drama school.
I
had to go to drama school, but you didn't go to drama school, did you?
I didn't. I kept meaning to. I thought I should, but I just kept getting work. I kept getting hired. So what's the point?
I say
really.
You know, I think drama schools are brilliant for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
But I
Absolutely.
Think some people, like yourself and like a few other people I know who didn't do that route, there's a kind of naturalness to them that,
that
maybe drama school might have spoiled because you were so young. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, possibly. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. Who knows? No. I think it's very individual, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I sort of learnt... on the job, as it were. When I first met Lee, I'd gone to Italy because I'd done an audition for Franco Zeffirelli for his film Brother, Son, Sister, Moon, which was about St. Francis of Assisi. And originally I went for a week to play one of his disciples. And I flew out on the plane with an actor called Robin Asquith, who you may remember from...
I do.
He used to do bawdy films in the 70s. He was sort of a bit of a heartthrob. Anyway, we both arrived together and we were told we'd have to have our heads shaved. And he had shoulder-length golden locks. And he said, forget about it, mate. I'm getting back on the plane. I'm going. He left.
But I stayed. He wouldn't have his hair cut. Because didn't you have to have that, what is it called?
It was a tonsure. Yeah.
Tonsure, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Lee, I think Lee had it done. It was because you were like monks, weren't
you?
That's
right. A sort of monk's haircut. Yeah. Really, very
and Robin wasn't having any of it.
He wasn't having that. But I stayed there. It was supposedly for a week, but I stayed on the film for 5 months.
Oh gosh!
And because Franco took a shine to me, I think. Buongiorno, baby. He used to give me a little squeeze every month. Baby, you stand here, baby. And Lee, who was already there working on the film, took me under his wing and looked after me. A little bit older than I was.
I say he's that much older. He's about 10 years older than you, isn't he?
Yeah, and you could see that I was swimming in a shark pool, so...
Yeah, I know. No, he would do that. He's very good with younger actors, actually, just making sure they're okay.
Yeah.
But
that, I mean, what a way to learn. I stayed on that set for 5 months, you know, and saw a master at work, Zeffirelli, master storyteller, and his great crew, camera people, and... wonderful costumes
it was
and all
such
that stuff.
It was such a gorgeous film that I loved it. And didn't Donovan do the music?
He did.
I remember.
Did,
yeah, it was beautiful. Yeah. And Judy Bowker was the young girl in it, wasn't
That's
she?
Right.
I loved that film. So what year was that?
72 maybe.
Yeah. But I remember it clearly. It was such a visual masterpiece. Because Zeffirelli's film, whatever you think of him, but his films.
Yeah.
I mean, I only ever met him once and he was charm personified, but I'm sure, the directors of that era were quite, well, you worked with another one, Polanski, they were quite demanding, weren't they?
Yeah.
They became almost like emperors.
Well, that's right. That happens to people, doesn't it? But you know, fame is a very dangerous thing, and to be told that if you're repeatedly told that you're wonderful and something special, eventually you start to believe it somewhere inside you, you know, and behave accordingly. So, big egos are not uncommon in show business. I mean, let's face it.
We've all met them.
Yeah. Sharp elbows and overinflated self-esteem will get you much further in show business than mere talent. You know, and if you don't have those things, it's easy to get pushed aside.
It is. But obviously, it must have been. I mean, to have your first film, and I remember because Lee says this. I think it was his first film to have it with Zeffirelli, who you know was and has been one of the great film directors of all time.
Yeah,
it must, and also to be. Living in Italy, and wasn't it amazing?
Oh, completely, yeah. A difficult act to follow, really. You know, starting at that level.
Come so. Home to your bed, sit and
yeah.
Or I think Lee said he came back to do a play and was like living on salad and, you know, because you don't earn much money in the theatre.
Yeah.
But then, so was it out of doing Brother Sun that you that Equus happened?
Yes. I auditioned for Equus at the Old Vic, which was then the home of the National Theatre. And I auditioned a few times. The final audition was for Laurence Olivier, who is quite a massive presence, I have to say. He was artistic director at that time. And the audition for Sir Laurence consisted of the end of the first act, which was riding a horse naked to orgasm, which I did astride a table. I know. I mean, you know, this is an actor's life. Anyway, I did it.
And how old were you?
I was 19 then.
Oh, God, that's tough.
I did it. And there's a little pub next to the stage door of the Old Vic called the Queen Vic, funnily enough.
Yeah.
And I went in there to calm myself down a little bit after the audition. And the stage doorman came in and he wandered over to me. I was at the bar and he said, "You've done that, mate. You've nicked it. I've heard them talking." So I thought, I've heard it from the stage doorman.
That's hysterical. That is hysterical.
Yeah.
But for those of the listeners who don't, I think most people will know what Equus was because of the film and the stage show. But for people who don't know, explain vaguely who wrote it and what the play was about.
It's a play by Peter Shaffer, and it questions psychotherapy, really. The question is, who's to say what is normal and what is not normal? And the boy, the patient in question, really dreadfully blinds six horses in a stable that he's working in. And it's about finding out why anybody would do that, peering into the dark cave of the psyche with a dim torch. These are lines from the play, actually. And what can you see with that dim torch? Nothing. So it's that exploration of psychotherapy and is it a good thing or a bad thing?
You did it in the West End, right?
No, I did it at the National.
Oh, the National, sorry.
Yeah.
And then didn't it go to Broadway?
I went to Broadway with it, with Anthony Hopkins.
Wow. Was it Anthony Hopkins you did it with in London?
No, it was the wonderful Alec McCowan, who was a leading classical player at the time and a wonderful man. I can't remember why he didn't transfer. I don't think he wanted to go to New York. He'd been there a couple of times in plays. Anyway, Tony Hopkins.
Tony.
No, had a year with Tony, and that was an education in itself, you know.
I bet. Oh, he's such a wonderful actor. And I don't know him very well. I've met him a couple, but he seems to be a really lovely, lovely man.
Yeah.
And then the film was Richard Burton, right?
It was, yeah. We did the film a couple of years after that with Richard. Richard had done the play on Broadway for 3 months as a kind of warm-up. And then we did the film with Sidney Lumet directing. We shot that in Toronto.
Another brilliant director.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
I mean, he was just the greatest. I mean, talk about economy.
An amazing film.
Yeah.
But weren't you? You were nominated for an Academy Award, weren't you?
I was, yes.
Yeah, quite bloody right.
Thank you. That was a great night. I remember that.
Going to the Oscars.
Yeah.
I've been twice to present. I've never been nominated, but I did present twice. It is extraordinary. But to be nominated, it must be so amazing.
I was a little bit disillusioned because we pulled up. You know, they have that sort of procession of limousines. You pull up outside the theatre where you get up, and there's a whole bank of people on bleachers all standing up and cheering. And I said to the PR guy who was with me, who are these people? He said, "They're your fans." I said, "I don't have any fans." And it turns out that the people cheering are out-of-work actors who are paid to sit up there. Yeah, to sit up there. Oh, in those days, that was 77. So
wow. I've never heard that before.
Anything that gives an actor a job has got to be a good thing.
So. Absolutely.
But it was a little bit disillusioning. I thought, I see how it works now. You know, it's
But you did win the Golden Globe, didn't you?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
Which I'm
very proud. Quite right. If anyone can, I don't know, can you get Equus on film on the streaming? Any of the
Do you know? I don't know.
I'm going to look at it.
It's available on DVD. It is on DVD.
Oh, it is. I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere out there it might be streaming. If it is, you should watch it because it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So the other thing I wanted to ask you, because I've met and I've worked with and Leah's worked with, I'm sure you have worked with child actors over the years, and very few manage to do the transition to adult performers. Yes. And you've done it in spades. I mean, how did you think about it? Did you have a plan, or did it just kind of?
No, there's no plan involved at all. It's largely luck, I think, you know, which is true of all actors, and any honest actor can tell you that. It's right place, right time. And I just fell into, like falling into acting in the first place, I then fell into serious, legitimate adult theatre, really with no plan. The lack of a plan has probably dogged me a little bit in later years, but in the early years, I just didn't need one. I was just kind of blessed, you know, it was like somebody had...
Well, obviously with every career, there's a certain amount of luck involved, but also I think talent has quite a lot to do with it. And you are obviously very talented, and they could see that. And also I think once, if you've worked with people like Zeffirelli and Polanski later on, which we'll talk about in a minute, but that on your CV is very encouraging to other people hiring you, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
But why do you think so many child actors don't do the transformation? Why do you think that happens? I mean, you hear horrible stories.
Well, you do. I was about to say, some tragic stories, you know, of people being kind of elevated to some stardom, level of stardom, that at vulnerable years in your late teens, and then to have the rug pulled from under your feet, that the road to stardom is littered with the corpses of failed younger actors. You know, that sounds a bit dreadful, but you know what I mean.
I mean, I'm always asked the question, because again, I was incredibly young when it happened to me, and you know, they say, would you encourage somebody of that age to do what you did? And it's very hard, because on one hand, yeah, go for it, have, you know, if you get the chance, do it. But then on the other, you do, you know, I know, like you do, the ones that it's gone wrong, and then that's devastating, again, when you're that young.
Yes. Well, if you get a shot, it might be your only shot. So generally, it's a good thing to take
I think so. I think so, because, I've met people, I'm sure you have, who over the years, because of parent pressure or whatever, who wanted to go into the arts, being a musician or an actor or a writer, and their parents have said, no, you've got to get a proper job and, you know, security and all that. And they've reached their 50s and they're like, why didn't I just have, why didn't I just try?
Yeah.
And it kind of haunts them.
Yes. I think if you get a chance, take it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely. So after Equus, did you go back into theatre or TV?
No, I stayed in New York for a couple of years.
Did you love living in New York? Because I
loved absolutely, it. Absolutely loved it. Most exciting place on earth, I thought.
It is. It's the only other city that I miss.
Right, yes.
I don't miss LA.
No, well, it's become a little bit Disney-fied now. Like Times Square is like being in Disneyland, you know, it's all neon.
Yeah, it has.
In those days, back in the 70s, if you had an English accent, that was a bit of a novelty. You know, it's there are lots and lots of British tourists there now, but then it was, you were treated almost like royalty, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Go on, say something. Hey, Peter, say something. You know. how now, Brown? How?
I did. The show I did in New York, my one and only, in 85. So it was a bit after that. But right. we were, because I don't know anyone out there who's been to Times Square and 42nd Street, which is like Disney paradise now.
Yeah.
We were all told you must not go to 40. We were on West 43rd Street, I think, or right, the next 46th, street over, yeah. I can't remember. You mustn't go to 42nd Street because it was That's so right. dodgy. It was all prostitutes and pimps and druggies, and we were like banned from going there. And you yeah. couldn't go. I rented a flat kind of on Broadway and 80 something, and they said that's the borderline. You can't go, you know, north of that. Yeah. And yet
well,
now
back
it's,
then, I think, yeah. you know, that was right. And certainly it was in the 70s. There were certain areas that you were...
But if you're doing a hit show, which you were and which I was, it's magical, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. You become a sort of member of the aristocracy, because if it's a hit show, everyone comes to see it. All the film stars from your childhood. And I met just about everyone. It was incredible.
I know, isn't it amazing? I can remember, because I nearly died, one night when I was doing it, and the show I did was a musical, and we did tap dancing, and there was a knock on my dressing room door, and it was Ginger Rogers.
Wow.
And it was like, oh. I said to her, I hope you didn't watch my feet too closely.
Yeah, no, incredible people come through your dressing room door. Yeah, just about everyone you can imagine.
So then you came back to England.
Yeah, I did, and did a couple of films here, Aces High and Joseph Andrews and whatever else I can't remember at the moment.
And when did you do Letter to Brezhnev?
That was a little bit later. That was in 1980, early 80, I think it was 84.
Oh, I love that film.
Yeah, lovely film.
It's such a gorgeous film.
They didn't tell anyone, the writer and the director, that they only had the money for a week's shoot. So we started, and then they wrapped and said, okay, they took what they'd shot to London to Channel 4 and said and showed them what they'd shot, and Channel 4 gave them the rest of the money.
Wow, so, what a brilliant story. So it could have just been a week's work.
Yeah.
Who directed that?
It's directed by Chris Bernard, who doesn't do very much in the way of films. He works in television now.
It was such a gorgeous film.
Yeah.
Now, that's where you met your now wife, although she didn't become your wife then.
That's
the
right.
Gorgeous...
Alexandra McKibben, or Alexandra Pig, as she was known.
That she was known. You were the two stars of it, weren't you?
That's right, yeah.
How many years later did you re-meet?
It was 22, I believe.
Oh, my goodness!
A long time afterwards, yeah.
Lovely.
We'd had a bit of a flirtation when we shot the film.
Ooh!
And then nothing developed out of that. We sort of went our separate ways. But she tracked me down, basically.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, about 12 years ago now.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And we met for lunch and picked up where we'd left off. And now we're married.
That's so lovely. We came to your wedding party. It was very,
that's
very
right.
nice. Will you make a lovely couple?
Oh, thank you.
But that was a great, again, if anyone can find it streaming, it's a wonderful film if they haven't seen it.
That's actually been re-released, a digital remaster by BFI.
Oh, brilliant.
Released
in the cinemas or?
No, on DVD.
Oh, okay. But I'm wondering if, because I know younger people, I don't know about your kids, but our kids, you know, they go on to streaming for everything.
Yes, that's right, they do.
Usually out there somewhere,
yeah.
There is, you know, often I want to watch something and I think, I wonder if that's showing again or if it, and you can often Google it
yes.
and find it. So yeah. Google Letter to Brezhnev, everyone.
It is around, yeah.
Now, I noticed in your bio that I was reading yesterday, you worked with Jeremy Brett, who I knew, in the picture of Dorian Gray for the BBC.
Right.
So
right.
What period was that?
That was probably late 70s, or maybe it was in the 70s, let's say that, because it was Jeremy Brett and John Gielgud.
Oh, gosh, I bet you got some stories from...
wonderful, wonderful stories from John Gielgud. And it was for the BBC, when they used to do like a Play of the Month. And that's, or Play for Today as well, they always used.
This was
Play of the Month. We did the picture of Dorian Gray, the wonderful story, which has now become a huge hit in the West End, hasn't it? With a
female actress playing.
That's
it,
right.
I think.
Yes, the lady from Succession.
That's right.
Snooks. I should know her name. I'm sorry, I don't.
Yes. No, you're right. I haven't seen it, but I'd quite like to see it actually.
Yeah, it's a great story. its relevance for everyone.
I've read it, and I think I probably saw this production because I love Jeremy, and he was a friend.
Wasn't he lovely? Yes.
Yeah, and I'll tell you a funny story. I mean, it always went, because I met Lee in 85, but after I did The Boyfriend, and Jeremy was a really good friend, and I was like 21, 22, and he said, I'm going to give you a book to read and you should play the girl in this. It's a wonderful book. And guess what it was?
What?
Tess of the D'Urbervilles.
Oh, how funny.
So I read it, fell madly in love with it, gave it to Ken Russell, who I'd just done The Boyfriend with.
Yeah.
And he was a big director then.
Yeah.
And he loved it. He knew it, and his wife, lovely wife, Shirley. But the rights didn't, you know how they hold the rights until so many years after the author's death?
Yes, yeah.
The rights weren't free until, I think it was 2 or 3 years. I can't remember now. So Ken said, don't worry, I'll keep an eye on it. And when they become free, I'll get them and we'll try and get it made. And then when it became free, Polanski grabbed
it.
And he'd obviously been looking at it, I think, because Sharon Tate.
His, had expressed an interest in it, yeah.
And I was so upset when Ken told me I've lost the right. But I mean, it's so weird that, I mean, you get over it, don't you? But I was at the time. But I didn't know Lee. I didn't know you. I didn't know anybody in that film. So when the film came out, I had to be very brave to go and see it. And of course, it's one of the most beautiful films ever made, I think.
It is quite a piece, yeah.
I mean, the moment that always, even when I read it and when I watched the film, the moment when Angel Clare, who you played brilliantly, I have to say, when you tell her a secret that you've actually been with other women before her.
Yeah.
And so she decides to open up to Angel Clare and tell him that she, you know,
she had lain with another.
Yeah, she'd lain with another. and Angel Clare leaves, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. When I read the book and I got to that bit, I thought I'd read it wrong. And I went
How
back.
How could that happen?
And I thought, that's not, because they're so much in love.
Yeah.
And I really thought they'd got it. I'd read it wrong. And
absolutely
it still
tragic.
Gets me.
I thought when I read the script, how am I going to pull that off? You know, everybody's going to hate me because they're all going to be in love with her, and I walk away from her. And it's quite a tough acting challenge to get over that one.
But dramatically, it's so powerful, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
Have you seen the? Because they remastered that, you know.
I haven't seen it for a while. No,
it's so gorgeous.
I'll have a look because
I think they had a screening because we went
at the VFI. They did, yes.
Yeah.
I think I was abroad.
The thing about it, because it's period, it doesn't date.
No.
And it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. And you had to shoot it in France, didn't you? Because Polanski couldn't come into England for various reasons.
No, exactly. We shot one scene in England, which is on a train. They needed an old-fashioned train, and there is one in Sussex, funnily enough.
Really?
The Bluebell line. And I thought, oh, great. Well, at least I'll have a couple of days without Roman over my shoulder. But no, he was straight on. I had to do it on the phone with him. They had a satellite phone in the early days there with him telling me what I was doing wrong, even though he couldn't see it.
How did you get on with him? Because, I mean, Lee's got endless stories.
Yeah. Well, he's quite tricky because he's... He likes to be the master of the whole thing, you know.
The
emperor, yeah. It can be quite demanding, but he's such a wonderful storyteller that any difficulties I always felt were worth it, you know. We had a 5-month schedule to shoot that film, and it stretched to 11 months because he was so meticulous and wanted things just so, this way, not that way. So it was double the time, you know, and consequently, double the budget.
But it's one of the great films.
Yeah, a classic. You know, so. I don't think they show it in this country now because of Polanski's problems, legal problems.
Oh, really?
You never see it on television, do you? Yeah.
No, that's true.
I think that's why.
Oh, you may be right because of, yeah.
Yeah.
And he certainly can't go into America, I know that. And they probably don't show it there.
No, exactly, which is gory.
But I think you can get it on DVD, can't you?
Yeah, yeah, you can.
Now tell me about Spooks.
Yes, Spooks.
That's a brilliant... I couldn't believe it, 10 series.
That's right, we did
85... I knew it was a lot, but 10...
85 episodes, 85 one-hour episodes.
Gosh!
And every episode was a story in itself. I mean, that's why it ended. Really, we just ran out of ideas. We got 85 stories. You know,
that's a lot.
And
did they have lots of different writers?
Yeah, we had.
It was a brilliant concept. Brilliant series. And you had because the original other guy was
Matthew McFadyen.
Oh, Matthew was first, was he?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, I thought it was
Rupert. He did the first two series with Keely Hawes. That's where they met.
Oh, is that where they met? Oh.
Yeah, they met on the show.
Oh, a love story from Spooks.
Yeah, now they're married with millions of children. Well, three or four anyway.
Oh, no, they're gorgeous.
He's had a fantastic career now, Matthew, and he's gone on to great things.
Oh, my God. Do you know, when Lee did, he was doing Midsummer Night's Dream at the RSC, playing Oberon, and there was this young actor, he said to me, when they would started rehearsing, he said, God, he played one of the young lovers, Matthew, and he was like 20, he was really young, 21, 22, and Lee said, there is this guy, he's just, you know, he's got it, he's amazing. Yeah. He said he's going to go on to great things, and... He has.
He has.
He is a wonder, and he's not only a wonderful actor. He's such a lovely guy, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
So sweet. And that, so Rupert Penry Jones took over from Matthew.
He did, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Rupert came in.
Who is also gorgeous and lovely.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, but that's how you get. You know, we like to keep the ladies entertained on Spooks. Got all corners covered. And alongside Matthew in the first two series of Spooks was a wonderful actor, David Oyelowo, who's now become a big star in America. So Spooks has been quite a launchpad for quite a few careers.
Yeah. But didn't you also make a film?
We did. Yeah, we finished TV series and then we went on to do a film a year later with Kit Harington of fame from What's It Called?
Oh, Game of Thrones. I've just been whispered in my ear.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Kit, yeah.
There's too much stuff out there to remember.
And then that was it. That was the end of Spooks.
That must have been hard ending that because you must get so close to everyone.
Well, that was 10 years, yeah.
Yeah.
10 years of all through middle age, actually, which was... quite a good thing for me.
It was a great character for you, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Didn't you love it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they don't come along that often. Great parts that an actor can fit into so easily.
It feels comfortable. But then you did more recently. You were in Victoria, weren't you? The TV drama.
I was.
Playing a duke, darling. The Duke of Cambridge. Cambridge.
Yes.
Terribly posh. Yeah. Well, that was a gorgeous series. Was that fun?
Yeah, weirdly enough, I played quite a lot of aristocrats and posh people, which, you know, I never get to play northern. I don't think I've ever done it, which is my, you know, my natural default setting.
But again, I keep saying about Lee, but he's the same. You know, he's from Coventry, but he never gets, he always gets posh parts.
Yeah.
It's weird that, isn't it? But I think with all performers, you know, you get kind of put into a kind of box of what you do and what...
bracket. Yes. Yeah. Casting, quite lazy casting department.
Yeah.
You know,
No, you're right, actually. she did that in this, so she can do it in this one.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I want to talk to you about, because people may not know this, not a lot of people know this, but you are a fantastic cook.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, you're chef standard.
Wow.
I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I'm still dreaming about your beef stew. Oh my God, Peter made this stew that was so, it was one of the best stews I've ever eaten, if I may say so.
It is a good dish. It's called a daube du bœuf.
Oh, gosh. It was amazing. Will you make it again one day, please?
I will. I make it quite regularly.
And the other thing I remember, you used to do, I think you did it in, because you had a house in Mallorca for a while when Lee had his house, and you made a big fish in, you cooked it in...
In salt, sea bass. It's a whole sea bass covered in rock salt, which you bake in the oven. Yeah,
amazing. Absolutely incredible. So where did you learn this? I mean, because you're not just a cook. You're a really, really good cook, chef standard.
Well, thank you, darling. I picked it up. I'm self-taught, really. My mum was a cook and in a works canteen. In Bradford. So I kind of used to watch her a lot.
And do you think it was when you came down to London, you were on your own and
I started eating out in restaurants. The food was incredible, you know. It's just all this wonderful, wonderful food. And I thought that it'd be interesting if I could reproduce dishes at home, which is what I try and do. If I have a great dish out, I'll try and reproduce it at home.
I love to cook. I'm not on your level. I'm a good cook and I love to cook. And if I go to a restaurant and I have something that I love, I often do ask the waitress to ask the chef if there's a sauce or something that I really... Some of them won't give it to you. The funniest one was in New York. I forget what it was. It was in New York and it was a salad dressing on this amazing salad. It was so good. Oh, no, it was in Florida, honey. And it was this Italian restaurant and this salad dressing. Again, I dream about this salad dressing. And I said, do you think the chef would give me the recipe? And she said, and we got to know the owner a bit. And she said, I think I can get it out of him. And about a week later, we went there and she said, here's the recipe. And I looked at it and he'd given me the recipe for the salad dressing, but it was to make like 3 pints. And I couldn't break it down. I thought, what am I going to do with 3 pints of salad dressing? So I never got to make it.
I think for me, a year in France with Polanski, that really was my gastronomic awakening.
Yeah. Well, Lee always said you and he, I think, didn't you share a place for a while? And sometimes you'd cook and sometimes he, and you'd always have very good wine.
Yeah, always.
And so it was a gastronomic...
Education.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So have you got anything coming up or have you just got things coming out or...
No, it's pretty quiet for me at the moment, but I don't mind that. I'm of an age where, do I need it? Because what my job consists of is getting up at 5 a.m., going somewhere, getting dressed again, and then having somebody shouting at me through a megaphone for 12 hours, often in the rain, and then go home and do the whole thing the next day again. So, you know, it's not quite as cushy as it might appear.
Well, you live in a beautiful part of the world. You're very near the seaside, aren't you?
Yeah, very close.
Do you go for lots of walks? Are you energetic?
Yeah. Try to be. Less and less so, I have to say. But, you know, the older you get, you realise you've got to look after yourself.
Yeah,
keep moving.
Tell me. It's really joints. Important. Well, I do Pilates once a week and I did drag Lee along eventually. Because he always worked out when he was younger.
Yeah, he always did, yeah.
Always did. So he was pretty fit. But then he kind of stopped because he found the gym a bit too hard.
Yeah.
And I just thought he should do something. And he loves it. And we only go once a week, but it kind of keeps everything moving. And it's much gentler than the gym. And in the summer, I try and swim.
I swim here in the sea,
swimmer.
But although recently there's been too much sewage.
You swim in the sea?
Yeah, quite. There's a lovely swimming beach close by. And,
oh, really? But isn't it rough?
No, well, no, it's rough. It's often calm.
But you're right. It's that some of that coast, there's been a sewage problem,
right.
Hasn't
Southern
there?
Water keep dumping untreated sewage into the sea. And then they put out flash warnings on the radio, do not swim today. You know, it's
unbelievable.
Like, how acceptable is that? Not really. So anyway, Fergal Sharkey's onto them.
Yeah, I say, he's got the bit between his teeth.
Yeah, go Fergal.
Well, I hope we get to see you soon. And I hope you'll cook me your beef stew.
Yes. Daube du bœuf.
What is it?
Daube du bœuf.
What's Daube? Daube du bœuf.
Daube is a French cooking pot.
Oh, is it?
A clay cooking pot. Brilliant. Yeah, a daube.
Oh, brilliant. So. I always remember, do you remember that day in Mallorca when in your garden, I think you'd cooked the sea bass, and in your garden, a cat had all those kittens. Do you remember?
That's right. I've got
that's
half
a vivid memory for me because the kids were quite small. Anyway, it's been so lovely to chat. Thank you for joining me.
Likewise, Twiggy.
And we'll see you very, very soon.
I hope so.
Lots and lots of love.
Lots of love. Bye-bye, darling.
Bye. Oh, that was so much fun catching up with Peter. And I really meant it about his cooking. He should open a restaurant. And you should always have his daube de bœuf. It was amazing, absolutely amazing. Anyway, lovely to catch up with lovely Peter. And try and look up some of those films that he's been in. He's a wonderful, wonderful actor. And they're fabulous films. Tess of the D'Urbervilles is amazing, and Letter to Brezhnev, and Brother, Son, Sister, Moon. They're beautiful, beautiful films. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed talking to my lovely friend, Peter Firth. If this is your first time listening to Tea with Twiggy, please do remember to tell your friends. You can also subscribe for free on your podcast app and listen to all my previous guests. If you want to connect with me, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter at Twiggy, or you can find me on Instagram at Twiggy Lawson. My thanks go to all the people that have helped this podcast happen. Many thanks to James Carroll and all the team at North Bank Talent Management. Thanks to all the team at Stripped Media, including Ben Williams, who edits the show, my producer Kobe Omanaka, and executive producers Tom Wally and Dave Corkery. The music you can hear now is my version of Waterloo Sunset by The Kinks. If you'd like to hear the whole song, you can find it and all the other songs I've recorded on iTunes and Spotify. So check it out. I look forward to you joining me for my next episode. So see you then. Bye.
Just heard a Stripped Media production.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.